The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Well, welcome back. As we head into hour three, we usually do so with Rabbi Pinchas Alush. Due to the Passover holiday, he can't join us today. So I thought I would end the show on a cultural note and series of notes nonetheless with our dear friend and my dearest of friends, Hugh Hallman, former mayor of Tempe, attorney and broad thinker and civic activist in town, because he and I have this dorky habit, I suppose, of not only subscribing to the same newspapers, but sending each other articles from the same newspapers we subscribe to, because we want to make sure the other person did, in fact, read it. So with Hallman, with Hugh Hallman, you never really finish homework in the 12th grade or after college. You keep getting homework, and it's good. He's a consummate teacher that way. Hugh, welcome back to the show. Thanks for closing our Friday and our week with us.
I am thrilled, but let's make it clear. I think you are the teacher, I am the student. I receive as many articles from you as you get from me. And it's really a process to make sure we've each seen some of the stuff that hits us in our souls to consider in our efforts. And so I'm grateful for this and this long relationship.
Well, people have to read. I was talking at an event. I was at a political event earlier.
Maybe that's my fault. Try that. Let's see. Is that better?
We shouldn't be doing this kind of stuff on the radio here. We're now having technical problems.
Can you hear me now?
Who? What? Yes. And Seth was having to switch some switches and push some buttons. And he is a consummate button pusher.
Yeah, right. I was having a conversation with someone at a political event earlier today, and we were talking about, you know, people find interesting once in a while that I'm a talk radio host or that talk how talk radio is done. And she was apologizing that she didn't know a lot about the station, or really for that matter, anything on the news on TV, because she says she's totally tuned out all TV and radio news. All she does is read. I actually complimented her on that. I think that is a better way in many respects to stay out of the frenzy and to stay out of the anxiety that is driven by so much talk radio, so much cable news, so much non-cable news, so much
social
network
media.
News. Yeah, social media. So I do think it's important to read. I do think that you can't know things unless you do your own research in today's day and age. And it didn't always used to be that way. There was a time where you could trust a little bit more. Today you cannot. Today you can't trust, unfortunately. And it's part of a failure of our institutions. It's part of a failure of what we demand of our institutions. But it's also part of a deliberate effort by many of our institutions. The media is not interested in journalism anymore. It's interested in promulgating one side of an issue. They see themselves as shapers of the news, in their own words, CNN's former president's own words, we shape the news. Or the head of NPR, they view themselves not as information penders or peddlers, but as ideological craftsmen and women. So anyway, I don't know why I was saying that, except for the fact that you and I do make a practice of reading a lot, and I think it is the way to learn more. You can't tune in. You
agreed.
Have to tune out a little bit.
Think of our founders, yeah, that they had the time and space, yeah, the intellectual time and space to read and consider and ponder and then debate in person.
Boy, how many times have you heard people or you or I say, I have no time to think anymore, right?
And you've raised the point, and when you start identifying it, we're going a little different direction, but as a global social issue, you've got television, radio, and social media, which I think just absolutely require immediate attention, stir you up. They intentionally stir you up because the underlying effort is to peddle you something to buy. Mm-hmm. It is now no longer when news media was a purveyor of information. Mm-hmm. It is now a purveyor of goods and services. And the means by which they get you those advertisements is something to entertain you. And it's pretense to say it's in the wrapper of news. And I do think our founders warned us of this. And Madison, of course, perhaps primary among those founders in drafting the constitutional pieces that he then writes about when he talks about faction.
Yeah.
And faction being that pent-up energy and furor that could destroy the very system he was working to create, and the need to create structural systems that would reduce the impact of that faction, that partisanship, and not sent in the sense at the time of Republican and Democrat, but just that people were on either sides of a battle. And he gives a huge list. I think it's in Federalist 10. Is it the list where he gives the list of the different sources, or is it 51? You're going to have to remind me. 14? Now I'm completely messed up in my head about where the citation comes from. But the list of things on which people will disagree, property, no property, money. Mm-hmm. He goes through a long list of things that divide us, religion among many, and that those sources of faction will cause people to become so animated with their emotions that their reason goes out the window, and they will then destroy the very structure. So he created the House, where that faction would boil off and we would have elections every 2 years. It would be much more reflective of the passions of the people at any given moment. The Senate elected every 6 years with the thirds division, so that it's slowly but surely rolled over. But important that it was elected by the state legislatures to make sure that the state's interests were protected and reasoned. And it gave you a two-step process where the faction within a state would select somebody perhaps that served in the Senate for 6 years. And that process pushed the passions that could destroy the structure of our government out of the system. And then the president, of course, being elected by an electoral college, so it's an indirect election, so that the president was also insulated from those passions. All of that's crucial to the survival of this tradition and this structure and this government that gives us the opportunity of liberty that you were just discussing with John Shattuck. What does it mean to have and exercise liberty? Is one the sheep, the shepherd, or the wolf? Mm-hmm. In creating that. And of course, the analogy that Lincoln is using, I'm making reference to the last hour. If you didn't hear it, go to the podcast, please, because it's brilliant, where the shepherd really is the structure of our government,
right?
That it is creating the space in which liberty is exercised and assured. And then we now see the craziness taking place on college campuses with students who have very little understanding of the issues in the Middle East, and even less, I would argue, understanding of the structure and import of the structure of the government under which they are exercising their freedoms of speech, and that they would so easily throw in with Marxist ideology, which would have it as one of its tenets the entire destruction of their ability to exercise those rights in the first instance.
Well put. And let me move this along then, because you mentioned two things: entertainment and education, how we entertain ourselves, how we educate ourselves and others. Peggy Noonan had a column this morning in the Wall Street Journal, and the theme of it is ugliness. And she's focusing mostly on entertainment, but I think it could be applied equally so to education. She said, "Uglification is rising and spreading as an artistic attitude." Again, I think it can be educational. She writes, "And it can't be good for us because it speaks of self-hatred. And a society that hates itself and hates life won't last, because it gives those who are young nothing to love and feel soft about, because we need beauty to keep our morale up." Education used to be about beauty. It used to be about... as Leo Strauss said, that the translation of vulgarity is the translation of vulgarity is the absence of things beautiful. And the purpose of education is to abjure vulgarity and show true beauty. You look at the campuses today, and you're seeing, I guess, the dividends of true ugliness. And ugliness in thought has translated into ugliness of action and speech. And I wonder if we might talk a little bit about that and then translate it over to what it's doing in our entertainment as well. Can we do education and entertainment when we come back?
Be delighted.
Hugh Hallman is my guest, and he and I will be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. I'm listening to that song, Love Is All Around, Who Can Turn the World On With Her Smile, a Sonny Curtis theme song to the Mary Tyler Moore Show. That was an idea of beauty. There was an ideal of beauty, turning the world on with a smile. People used to do that with one another. I don't know if people are friendly anymore. Did masks change that, Hugh Hallman?
Well, the opening credits to that show included. It's Mary Tyler Moore throwing her hat into the air and other similar things.
Yeah.
We talked about COVID and masking
for
our society, and I do think that is a moment in time that changed significantly. We had an order of magnitude change in how we socialize, and many young people missed a period of time crucial in their development, and I think we will see that play out in their lifetimes for the worse for our society. And it's not just in the United States, most of the Western world. And that's what brings us to this issue of we have this uglification in the Western world. Yeah. It's not just in these United States. In fact, Peggy Noonan is giving voice to the an example of that process in London with the mounting of a reprise of a revival of cabaret.
The musical cabaret.
The musical cabaret.
You know, Liza Minnelli and Joel Grey.
And Joel Grey did a movie version of it, and they'd done it, I think, on Broadway beforehand. Mm-hmm. And it caught my attention because you brought it to my attention, again, sharing articles. But I happened to have seen that production in London last December, and Peggy Noonan hit it exactly right. It is a show that already is challenging. It is a hard show because it is about the rise of Nazism in Germany, and the interplay of the characters is about very difficult, fierce things going on in their individual lives in the context of the Nazis coming to power. And I don't think it's a spoiler. Anybody who doesn't know this story yet won't likely get to see it, won't take the time to see it. But the original play and show is about, among other things, an elderly couple that comes together, and the man happens to be Jewish, and the woman decides she has to turn her back on him as the Nazis are rising up and threatening her livelihood. That's just one of the many stories within this show, and yet this new production diminishes the import of those kinds of pieces of the story and replaces it with this outrageous, every character is nondescript gender. The Joel Grey character, who is he's the MC at the story is set in a nightclub, effectively a German nightclub, and that's the motivating force, is how the people interact with this nightclub and the performers in the nightclub. And Joel Grey is the MC, and they've turned in this new revival production the Joel Grey role into a transgendery kind of thing that overrides the main messages that this character is supposed to deliver, in the same way that the tension between the older gentleman and older woman gets overridden by the surrounding craziness that's going on the stage, because the surrounding dancers and actors are all these bizarre, attention-grabbing, genderless forms swirling to grab your attention away from the entire motivation and purpose of this story about the rise of the Nazis and what it did to an entire society and how people engaged in that. And it's a shame. And Peggy Noonan is bringing to voice how awful this process is, where every artistic director and every actor thinks they've got to now turn everything they do into some commentary about transgender livelihood issues and all the other things that are very, very difficult to deal with in our society and put them in the worst light they possibly can.
Is, you know, it's interesting. Okay, let's stick with the entertainment element for a moment, because plays like that that were set to movies and get these revivals from time to time, they were entertaining. They were great entertainment. They had great, often, music. I think Maybe This Time is one of the most memorable songs to come out of Cabaret. But you have other movies and plays that were also, like Cabaret, instructive. I'm thinking of South Pacific. You've Got to Be Taught to Hate. That's a song about how you instill bigotry in a child, right? When you're 6 or 7 or 8.
Unquote.
Unquote. And Cabaret had its own messages about how Nazism can rise. All of these lessons that we thought we drew, by the way, those plays and movies resonated because we could all understand them, right? We all kind of, it's not that we got the joke, we got the meaning. And so when you see these revivals that change those meanings completely and just depart entirely from the effort of the original authors to do some kind of avant-garde, I suppose avant-garde thing, and it's all about this turn in society about sex or gender or sex and gender fluidity, it's weird that we're abandoning the original meanings on race and the rise of fascism and hate and teaching children racialism. We're abandoning all that at the very moment we need it most. It's as if the lessons did not obtain, did not adhere, and we don't care to ever teach them again. We're just going to now leapfrog to this thing that's not really an issue. But if you go, I mean, in small circumstances it might be, but it's not really an issue that roils societies, that now totally dominates our campuses and totally dominates entertainment. You and I were at the hearing, joint hearing a year ago on ASU and speech, and Dennis Prager made this interesting point when he was reciting the names and the expertise of the various faculty at the Barrett Honors College. And he said, as he read their curricula and their CVs, something really poignant. And it was weird. And he was right. He says, it's everything at ASU about sex. It was odd when you went down the list of these 36 or 7 professors' areas of expertise. It was all about transgender this and gender. That's all we teach anymore. Seemingly, just at the moment, it seems to me, where the eruptions show we never really learned the right lessons about race and fascism.
Well, you've got Ibram Kendi,
right,
making sure in the last decade that we all understand that you can only understand race if you actually pay attention to race. And if you don't pay attention to race, you're a racist because you have some hidden bias that nobody knows about and nobody can understand. It is the philosophical equivalent, as we've discussed, of the clear coat on your car. You don't know it's there, but you have to have it nonetheless. And in his efforts to bring voice to that concept, you must identify all of these things that for many of us we have been working to say that's irrelevant. The Martin Luther King notion that the content of your character is more important than the color of your skin. And yet Ibram Kendi insists, no, we must pay attention to race. That's the only thing that matters. And the real underlying reason for that is, how can you identify yourself as a victim if you do not have a characteristic that you can claim is the source of your victimization? And similarly, how do we identify oppressors? We must identify oppressors in the same way. And that's what's been going on. Creating victims, creating perpetrators, creating oppressors and oppressed. And without those identifiers, you cannot do it. And that is the intention that they have to follow.
Let me pick up on that. There was a columnist in the New York Times you and I kind of like who was getting into this notion of a nation of oppressors and oppressees. Hugh Holman and I will be right back on that point. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. Hugh Holman, my guest. Thank you for being here and ending your week with us, Hugh. Means a ton to me. Appreciate it so much. One last point on what you were saying about the Kendi, Ibram Kendi view of race, this new view of race should matter as opposed to race shouldn't matter, humanness should matter. I think there's a parallel with what the gay rights movement was saying, and in regard to where that morphed into this transgender movement. The gay rights movement was, this stuff shouldn't matter. We're all human beings. But the transgender movement has changed that, hasn't it?
In the Ibram Kendi way.
In the Ibram Kendi way, saying, no. You do have to recognize these things. They do matter. They do make a difference. And we must be seen. It's not as if
you must acknowledge my presence and my choices. And if you do not acknowledge my choices instead of say that they don't matter, then you're a bigot.
Right. That's the better way to put it. So Pamela Paul, who I gather is some kind of old school liberal based on the biography of hers I've been able to read, writes for the New York Times. And I think she's perhaps their most interesting writer at this point, because she is this old school liberal who kind of writes from a Bill Maher point of view, if you will. And she's talking about in her most recent column that just because you've been wronged doesn't make you right. She says the acrimony of this oppressor-oppressed dichotomy has only intensified in the past few years. The battlefield, she says, keeps widening. What begins as a threat often descends into protests, riots, and physical violence. It's difficult for anyone to wade through all of this without feeling wronged in one way or another, but it wrongs us all. And if we continue to mistake grievance for righteousness, we only set ourselves up for more of the same. I give you today's college campus.
Yes, and I'm going to put most of the blame on the leadership of the Democratic Party, because this process of stamping the imprimatur of power on the oppressed, who then want to turn to violence and destruction, started in the Summer of Love, when Black Lives Matter decided that race, at Dr. Kendi's insistence, was the only thing that mattered, and that they would run around and start blowing up courthouses in Portland, destroying buildings in Los Angeles, destroying buildings in Scottsdale, Arizona, all in the name of bringing to the attention that as oppressed people, blacks in this country somehow had the right to make those moves. And it's bizarre, and she's giving voice to this, that the idea that you were wronged or someone in your family in the distance was wronged gives you the right to take a brick and throw it through a window. That's not what Western society teaches us. Western society teaches us that there is a rule of law, and our effort should be to right wrongs and do it through the process of a judicial system. And then we hear, oh, well, the judicial system is so biased, we can't get justice through those systems. So we create an argument that nothing that Western society can offer us is a solution to these wrongs that have been done, and so any action is allowed. Well, welcome to the complete destruction of the very society that gives you the right to, again, exercise any freedom, and freedom of speech in particular. Those are the seeds being sown by the left. Why do I say it's the left? Because it was the likes of the then Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, who said that the protests going on in the Summer of Love with massive destruction and many, many people murdered and killed was mostly peaceful. And yet they then turn
their... people will do what they will do. Yeah. I just could never get past that quote.
And then you turn to January 6th, right, and suddenly when no one actually was killed in those instances, it is the most destructive, violent event ever to have occurred, and certainly even outstrips the Civil War in their view. And how do you square that circle?
Mm-hmm.
Well, college students aren't stupid any more than young children are. Parents learn that if their child is throwing a fit in the grocery store to get candy, they can give them candy and get them quieted down pretty quickly. But then they've just taught the child that if they throw a fit, they get rewarded.
Okay.
And that is exactly what we have done with college students and have done with that band of kids for the last 50 years.
Okay.
We have rewarded them with cookies in order to promote the craziness they're engaging in.
All right, let me make this harder when we come back, because you said something really interesting here.
For once.
Parent, the word parent. I'd like to come back and talk about that for a moment with you, Holman. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. Hugh Hallman is my guest. And we're surfing through a bunch of cultural problems, all perhaps boiling down to what Peggy Noonan was writing about in the Wall Street Journal today, an ugliness that has now suffused so much of our culture. And we went through entertainment, went through education. But, Mr. Hallman, you used an interesting word in our last segment, something about parents. And I was struck after the Uvalde massacre in Texas. A parent said of the assailant, you know, everyone's looking at what he did today and everyone's looking about what happened over the last couple of weeks. Was he bullied? Was he not bullied? What his political predilections were? What about the first 18 years of his life? What was going on there? I'm looking over at Columbia. Did you see this student? Goes by several genders, who is a leading protester at Columbia on behalf of the Palestinians and Hamas, said Zionists don't deserve to live. He said, be grateful that I'm not just going out and murdering Zionists. Maybe it's a failure of our education system, but am I wrong to think maybe the parents failed too?
I don't think that's an uncertainty.
Okay.
Yes, we must understand when we see someone like this taking these kinds of actions that they may have come through a tumultuous childhood and be bearing scars that we can't even imagine. But one of the conditions of Western society and its stability is, at the end of the day, individuals are responsible for themselves and their actions. That every one of us has a story to tell that can explain away our choices and bad behaviors. But at the end of the day, under our understanding of right and wrong, you exercise agency, and in the exercise of that agency must be held accountable for doing so. And your right to exercise agency through liberty and action imposes upon you limitations in that exercise. And if you do not recognize those limitations, then one wonders, are you human?
Mm-hmm.
And a presidential candidate gets criticized for calling some people animals. Mm-hmm. And the effort from the left is to say he's referring to all Mexicans, for example. Mm-hmm. That's nonsense. Mm-hmm. He is raising the very fundamental issue that philosophers have discussed for thousands of years.
Right.
What does it mean to be human, and when do you cross the line such you no longer, notwithstanding the fact that you were in human form, are not human, that you have destroyed the basis on which you get to exercise liberty and agency as a human being? And we know certain people who've done that. That's why we in the West have had the death penalty. It was the decision that you have taken certain steps so far that you no longer deserve to be among us because you are no longer human.
Yeah.
And we see people coming across the southern border bringing poison to our children and our society, who murder one another in horrific, horrible ways. I don't think it's wrong to say that those people are not human beings. They are animals.
Yeah. You look at some of these videos that Hamas has released of the hostages of late. I don't think this has made a lot of news, but you see they're missing limbs.
Yes.
They weren't missing limbs on October 6th. And you have these videos of them. Oh, no, they're alive. Where'd the arm go? Where'd the arm go? And it does come to this notion, Hugh, and when Donald Trump spoke of that, he was speaking of course, the of the cartels and the violence that they inflict on
murdering
society.
Tens of thousands of people.
Absolutely.
In horrific ways.
And ruining countries.
Yes.
You do have to come to the conclusion Hannah Arendt came to at the end of Eichmann in Jerusalem as she watched the trial of Eichmann. And she said what that trial in Israel yelled was that there are some crimes so grievous and some people so evil that we as a collective society of human beings have to rise up as one and say this: we simply cannot share the earth with you. We simply cannot share the earth with you. And
it's a weird thing that these protesters who are supporting those who engage in mayhem, I guess that's the technical term for what happens when you lop off someone's arm. Mayhem, right?
Burn a child in a crib.
Burn a child in a crib, tie others to each other and burn them such that their spines are fused and you can't figure out who's who. All of that, putting children in ovens and having their parents watch it as if this were 1945 again or 44 or 43 or 42 or 35. And you have college students at this great moment of advancement defending that? That's an ugliness.
And we in this society now cannot turn our eyes from this any longer. Right. It has been discussed as a theoretical matter that universities have gone too far left. Now we have complete proof that you've got our major universities, the epitome of university education, the elites, with this going on, with a student talking about that we all should be happy and feel ourselves lucky that he's not out murdering Jews. That's the sort of sad commentary we now have, and it's time to do something about it. Now, we need to do it rationally and reasonably. It's fascinating that the Faculty Senate at Columbia is now rethinking their censure of their president, because if they go too far, she might be replaced with somebody who's worse in their minds. It is rather, as we discussed, about a news story where an elderly black woman was talking about her efforts to become a voter and that young black people are no longer voting for Democrats.
Right.
That's worse than not voting at all in this sort of a commentary. And that's the problem we're now looking into. I want to touch on one thing very quickly because we've not done it enough. And it just came up, and it's one of the articles we exchanged. Why didn't we start beating this drum before? Hamas, nothing happens until you release the hostages. Nothing happens good for you until you release the hostages. And we ought to be beating the drum. The reason I'm raising that is it was just a day and a half ago that President Biden and 16 other Western leaders finally started articulating that condition. While they've been putting massive conditions on Israel and claiming what Israel's been doing to defend itself is out of bounds, they have been silent about the fact that hostages were taken. They're being dismembered in front of their family members' eyes, fellow hostages, raped and other horrors visited upon them, and they are still being held. And yet we've been calling on Israel to behave better, and nobody on the Western Front in leadership has been calling on that very first question. Release hostages, because what you are doing with them demonstrates you are animals.
Hugh, when we come back, it's our short segment, but as COVID woke up a lot of people to what was going on, elementary and secondary, even though a lot of us have been talking about it for years, have the last 6 months and maybe the last 6 weeks woken people up to what we've been talking about at the college and university level? I wonder if you might take a stab at that. Hugh Hallman and I will be right back and close our thoughts there. Hugh Hallman has been generous with his time and brain in being with us and closing our week together. Hugh, elementary and secondary K through 12 education was unveiled and melded for all to see during COVID when parents got a chance to see what was going on in the classrooms, or at least what was going on with the curriculum that was being taught to their children. And it was a big wake-up call and a big moment for reform. Hopefully it sustains. Last few weeks going to be the same when it comes to higher education, you think? Will there be a similar wake-up call? I have a feeling some USC parents, I have a feeling some Columbia parents are saying, yeah, we know it was left-wing, but this? I don't know.
No, I think you are correct, but that does require those of us on the conservative side or classical liberal side to do two things. We need to be beating this drum loudly, but we need to behave in a way that demonstrates that we're not trying to destroy academic freedom and freedom of speech. We are not, but that's going to be the drum beat that we hear. The Columbia Faculty Senate is talking about how sad it was that the president of their university explained in Congress that it was worth investigating when people were screaming from the river to the sea as a matter of free speech. and that of course, is a dog whistle call for the destruction of Israel and the genocide of Jews who live there. So that college students bleating that on a campus may not understand it is inexcusable. And those who do understand it should not be excused. You spoke at the end of the last hour about a Lincoln speech that gives voice to the idea that liberty is essential to our society, but we need a good definition of it. And he used the analogy of a shepherd with sheep and a wolf seeking to capture one of the sheep for his dinner. And Lincoln makes the point that the shepherd stopped the wolf and the sheep was happy that that liberty remains in his opportunity and his life. And the wolf is decrying that interference with his own liberty. And Lincoln uses the analogy to say, and of course the sheep was black, to emphasize the issue of slavery, and that those who want to own other human beings are behaving as that wolf in imposing upon the human being. Well, we have to define these terms. We have to understand them. And all of this assumes we have a shepherd who is available to assist us. And that shepherd in the founding of this country was the structure given to us. Those of us operating within that structure to preserve liberty need to exercise our agency to act as good shepherds and pass along the lessons and philosophy that create this opportunity for us and our future.
I've read that speech hundreds of times. Never until today did I realize what you just taught me, Hugh. Thank you. It's about the shepherd. Bless you. And bless you all, folks. Thanks for spending some of your time and week with us. Until Monday, on behalf of Hugh and Mr. Bill and Terry, God bless you all, and class dismissed.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.